Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly. Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus. Well, we got a great show planned. Fitz Dog, Greg Fitzsimmons is going to be zooming in. Lisa Curry, comedian's back in the studio. And then Dr. Peter Attia, who's a very interesting longevity guy and a race fan, is going to be on the show as well, news as well, all that right after this. Well, I just want to tell you about a quick podcast study here. As you know, by now, we all do our very best to align the right sponsors to the podcast. It's a lot of work behind the scenes, and I'm actually incredibly grateful for your support. We're currently running a quick survey at podcaststudy.com, and we're giving the first 150 people a $10 digital Amazon gift card as incentive to complete your survey. The information we hear from you about our sponsors is incredibly important to the show, and we can't thank you enough for taking a few minutes to help us out. It's free, so cut us a break, would you? Upon completion of the survey, you'll be asked to include your email address, and we will send the first 150 people a $10 gift card from Amazon. So go to podcastingsurvey.com, and thank you again for helping out our show and our sponsors. This show is brought to you by Just Thrive Probiotic, a spore probiotic that banishes gas and bloat so your gut can produce more serotonin, your happy hormone. Plus, it supports better sleep. JustThriveHealth.com. Use the promo code Adam. It will change your life.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Greg Fitzsimmons and Dr. Peter Attia. Plus, Lisa Curry filling in on the news, and now he comes from a family of pearl clutchers, despite the fact they could never afford any pearls. Adam Carolla.
Not even pearls of wisdom. Lisa Curry is hanging in again. Fitzdog is zooming in again from his home office. Good to see you guys.
Hey, good to be here.
Fitzdog, you got us?
I'm here, baby. I'm here. I wish you could be there in person, but, you know, I have commitments on the west side.
Understood. I wanted to ask you guys, I have a list of things, famously, that I would like to do before I die. Or it's been outlined in a couple of books, maybe a book I've written. But it's things like I would like to go on stage and have somebody remove a cape from me before I started performing. That kind of stuff. But in earnest. You know what I mean? Seriously. Yeah. Like James Brown or something like that. I'd like to dive into a body of water with a knife in my mouth. And I have, you know, like my hands registered in Nevada as a lethal weapon.
Yeah.
Things like thrown out of a casino for winning too much. Like I must be counting cards. You know, things that would kill a woman having sex. You know, that kind of thing. But obviously using my penis. I'm not a weirdo. I'm not talking about strangulation. I came up with one yesterday.
Yeah.
I would like to do something very heroic, be injured in the process, you know, like shot in the gut or something. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, when my partner comes by and cracks one of those tough guy jokes at the end of the movie, I laugh and then I wince and grab my side.
Yeah.
That is a badass move right there.
Did he say we're getting too old for this shit?
Something like that. And then I go, ah, damn it. Yeah. Right. That I shall add to my list of things I need to do before I go.
I think I would like at some point to be holding a rifle and have somebody screaming in my ear, take the shot.
Right. Yeah. Take the shot.
Take the shot.
Or possibly shoot your partner in the leg who's being held at knife point by the bad guy. And then at some point he's pissed off about it, but it's all you could do. All right, so I got plenty of stuff I want to get into. Here's a bigger, deeper, philosophical mindset kind of thing that we could all think about in terms of self-betterment.
All right.
And maybe, you know, like what happened with COVID is everyone got kind of sucked in and then we got into groupthink and then we stopped sort of thinking things. Like I've said, like the second I heard mask up in between bites, I was like, oh, so a mask doesn't do anything. And everyone else was like, you heard the woman on the airplane. She said mask up in between bites. And I'm like, yeah, but that's nothing. That's like not wearing a mask. And they're like, do what she said. Mm-hmm. It's science, you know? And I was like, no, it's not. But I realized we all have to explore, and then we have to challenge ourselves constantly. Like, why are you wrong about this, or what don't you know about this? So I will give you a very pedestrian example of this, but I think it speaks to a bigger, better mindset we should all have. Okay. Mark Garagus, attorney Mark Garagus's wife, Paulette, lives in the neighborhood. And she's one of these women that just walks around the neighborhood all day, every day. Anytime I go for a walk, there's Paulette Garagus.
Same path?
She'll circumnavigate the whole place. Uh-huh. I don't know. I got to put a tracker on her. But she got hacked into her phone, figure out where she's going. She's a dutiful person. She's one of these people that, I remember once I went down into Mark's garage and there was her Tesla plugged in. Mm-hmm. And I said to Mark, oh, she's charging up the Tesla. And he said, no, she plugs it in every night. And I said, yeah, but if it's got 325 miles worth of range and she's mostly on foot.
She's just in the neighborhood.
She's in the neighborhood and she comes back and it's 285 range. Mm-hmm. Why is she plugging it in? And he said, because that's what she does. And I sort of like, well, I thought the whole idea of a Tesla was plug it in once, run it out during the week, and then plug it in again. It'd be like sort of topping off your car every 14 miles. But anyway, she's a dutiful person. Mm-hmm. I even saw her. I spotted her doing something that I love. I saw her at a distance, a great distance. But I knew it was her. She didn't see me when we were walking through the neighborhood. And she stopped in front of a stranger's house. And she picked up some garbage from the ground and walked it to the next trash can and threw it away.
That's nice.
It's a good, it's the opposite of seeing someone let the dog shit on the neighbor's lawn and then look around and keep walking, right? It speaks to the person's character, right?
Yes. And just doubling back for a second, if you have an electric bike, somebody just sent me this article. There have been hundreds of electric bikes, if you keep them plugged in overnight, they burst into flames. Something that's not in the user's manual.
Right.
And like houses have burned to the ground because the electric bike is plugged in overnight. You gotta plug it in during the day and then unplug it.
I shall pass that along to Paulette Garagus.
Isn't that bad for batteries? Generally, you're supposed to let it run down and then plug it back in?
I think they say you want the battery to cycle, pardon the pun, with the electric bike. But run it down and then fill it back up again. Now, anyway, so here's the thought experiment. So Paulette Garagus, as she's navigating the neighborhood, keeps finding these metal rods, and they're like 8, 10, 11 inches long.
Okay.
They're flat in shape, and they're thin, and they're only about a quarter inch wide by like 10 inches long, and they have no ends on them, just these broken, flat sort of metal rods. And so she takes pictures of them, and she sends them to me. Because I don't have enough to do, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And she wants to know what they are. What are these things? I find them all the time. And I say, I look at it, and I also look around. I see a lot of construction going on in the neighborhood. And see, this is my own bias. I come from a building background, so I'm constantly trying to tie everything into something building.
Yeah.
But it's on the side of the curb. It's on the street, but it's where the gutter is. And there's all this construction going around. And what are these little metal flat rods everywhere? So I say, I think I know what they are. So I write her back and I say, I think they're form ties. Now, forms are what you pour concrete into. And the ties are what stops the two plywood forms from bursting when you're putting the concrete into it. But there's some problems with my examination of this. One is the form ties would be embedded, entombed in the concrete. They actually stay in it. So why are these things loose and on the ground? And they also have ends on them too that are like threaded. So I say, I think they're form ties where like the ends busted off and the guys just tossed them when they were forming up, or they broke them and they just tossed. I think it's the center of a form tie. And she's a nice, congenial woman, so she doesn't write back, fuck you, you're a liar. She just kind of writes back like, or not so sure. Like, she was dubious. She was polite, but she was dubious. Then she kept them coming. Every 4 weeks or so, I'd get another picture of another one of these flat pieces of metal that were found by Paulette Garagos. And then I would, and then I started going online looking at form ties. What shape are they in? Could this be the center part? She's saying there's different lengths. Sometimes they're 6 inches, sometimes they're 11 inches. I go, well, there's different thicknesses of forms. They have thinner forms and thicker forms. A lot of form tie talk, lots of back and forth. Then I'm walking through the neighborhood. Now, shortly before I embark on my walk the other day, I get another text from Paulette Garagos saying she found one again. This is our way of communicating, evidently.
Yeah.
We've also spoken in person at length about... We shared Mark's private jet to New York, and most of it was a talk about what these metal pieces were.
She just pulls out a bucket of them.
She gets her phone out. She starts going through pictures. So I then take a picture of the one I find, send it to her. Then I go to new construction that is 100 feet away with the formed up wall. You know the new concrete walls where you see all those round holes in them everywhere? It's become kind of cool. I'm like, that's the form tie. That's a, I take a picture of the wall. I send her the wall. I send her the flat thing. She once again greets that with a, you know, I've not sold her on this. I'm sort of three quarters sold on the form tie theory, but I'm not totally sold on it either. So while on the walk that I have, where I discovered this piece of metal and took a picture of it and sent it to Paulette Garagos. And by the way, when I write my coffee table book entitled Things Black People Think White People Do All Day, this will be a chapter. These are our biggest problems that confront the Garagoses and the Corolla family in La Cañada, California.
Yeah. When you're not plugging in your Prius or flying in your private
jet. That's right. We're trying to blow the lid off this form tie controversy. So I am questioning myself in a healthy way. And then I say, while I'm walking, I tweet it out there. I say, listen, there are these metal rods. They're flat. They're not threaded on either end. And I think they're a form tie, but I want to hear what the people have to say. And within minutes, I get back a text that says, Those are the metal brushes from the street sweeper who runs along the gutter, and they break off periodically. Right. And that's why there they're different lengths, and that's why there's no head or threads on either end. And that's why she's finding them as she walks along the side of the street everywhere. And I say, thank you. And then I immediately convey that to Paulette Geragos, who I think accepts it at this point. But bigger picture, whether it's politics or COVID or whatever your thing is, question yourself a lot. You can have theories, but you have to bounce them off of other people. You can't surround yourself with the form tie people who are patting on the back. You have to challenge it. You have to go, I'm looking for a better answer than this. This is what I got, but I'm wide open to whatever you got. Please change my mind on this subject. Again, political, whatever the subject, whatever you're ensconced in, you've hived yourself off, you have your preconceived thoughts about everything. Mm-hmm. I was locked down on this form tie thought for 9 months. But I wanted to question myself. Like, I wanted to be challenged. And I mean, it's a metaphor, but we should all go through life that way.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's totally unhealthy to just decide you're right and then move forward. I mean, I do think all of my opinions are facts.
Yes.
But I think you should be willing to, it's just learning. It's just continued learning.
And also factor in your preconceived notions and experience. Like, I am the only one in that neighborhood who knows what form ties are, who lives in that neighborhood. The rest of the guys come in from Pacoima, use the form ties, and then go back to Pacoima. And I decided, because that's my background, that this is what this must be. Yeah. And then that was me sort of tampering with the evidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And the irony, the sweet irony that the guy that's supposed to be sweeping up the neighborhood is dropping metal rods all over
right?
the place.
Oh, that's right.
I kind of wish you would have told her that you did get confirmation that they were form ties just to fuck with her. Like, no, they are for sure.
she's a polite woman, but I clearly wasn't winning her over.
Yeah.
And she wasn't. She was being polite about it, but she was, I could tell she was disagreeing with me. So now I think we have our answer.
Would you have pursued it as hard had she agreed with you right off the bat?
That's interesting. I don't know. After finding the one and examining it myself and photographing it from many different angles before I sent it to her, that probably would have brought some of my thinking into question. But yes, if she had just jumped on my side and confirmed what I thought, I'd probably do less investigating.
Yeah. And I don't mean that in like a argumentative way. Just if you get another person that says, yeah, you're right. It's like, okay, great. Next thing.
I think that's why people should surround themselves with people that challenge them a little bit and aren't, you know, in the posse, so to speak. All right. Have another thing I want to talk to you guys about, which is, let's see, did my form ties. I wanted to ask you guys about this as well. What did I write down here? Oh, one of my fantasies on the list of things that I'd like to be done was a clip we were showing from Con Air a couple of weeks ago, where he was informed, what's his name from Con Air? Oh, you two intellectuals don't know who I'm talking about. I'll think of it in a second. Anyway, he was informed by the judge that because of his military training, he was a weapon, essentially.
Yeah.
And because of that, he was going to get extra time for taking out these three townies in a parking lot out front of a bar who'd picked on him. Now, I if you watched the movie, he had horrible representation because all Nick Cage was doing was walking out to his pickup truck at the end of the night, and mm-hmm. these three jumped him with pull the switchblade, and of course he beat the shit out of them. But that's what got him into prison in Con Air. And I was talking about it like a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, man, I it would be bittersweet if the judge was sentencing me to 8 to 13 years, but of that, a boy for saying that I was essentially a killing machine mm-hmm. and wouldn't operate under the same jurisdiction that mm-hmm. a natural man yeah. would.
You're superhuman.
Who is not trained to be a killer. Yeah. We have that.
And that's how you want to enter the prison, by the way. I mm-hmm. mean, if you're going to walk down that, you know how you got to walk in and then they yeah. all tell you they want to fuck you?
Mm-hmm.
That little walk of shame.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were a little handsy with some kids in the neighborhood, that's a way different entrance than the guy who is in there because he killed. And he's not allowed to.
Right. And he killed with his hands, which yeah. Is good for prison because that's about all you get to work with. But we'll play the clip and then I'll forward it on to something that's in the news, which I heard about. And we'll see if we can find this clip. But so I was announcing a couple of weeks ago that I wish that happened to me. We'll play the...
Not the jail time part.
Play the clip. I just like the judge telling me I was a killing
yeah.
machine.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
You have pleaded guilty to manslaughter in the first degree. With your military skills, you are a deadly weapon. You are not subject to the same laws as other people that provoked, because you can respond with deadly force. It is the order of this court that you be remanded to a federal penitentiary, where you shall remain incarcerated for a term not less than 7 to 10 years.
Con Air. All right. So I was talking about this scenario 2 weeks ago, and then a week later, that Marine choked out the Michael Jackson impersonator nut job who was on the subway mm-hmm. with him. And I heard a judge saying, with his military training, that puts him in a different category. And I thought, oh my God, this is a yeah. life imitating art here. I'm just talking about it and it just happened.
My understanding of that situation was that he was highly trained and he knew how to put somebody in a chokehold or like restrain someone without killing them. And he deliberately chose to kill them. So
really?
That's
a story.
Yeah, that was my understanding of it from
NPR.
No, from a friend who's a former Marine.
Oh, really?
Who was like, yeah, no, he did. They train you to do, you know, different levels of. And listen, I'm sure somebody's going to comment and be like, she's wrong, and that's fine. but they, from my understanding, they train you to do different levels of restraint.
Uh huh.
And so he knew better and chose to kill the guy.
Now you sound like the judge from Con Air. Yeah.
Once you get your arm around a Michael Jackson impersonator's neck, good luck letting go.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah. Now, if you get your arms around, let's say, a Joey Buttafuoco impersonator.
Yeah.
Or a Dwayne Johnson impersonator or yeah, something like
it.
That.
Yeah.
That you can let go of. But once you get your hands around Jacko, you yeah. ain't letting go.
Yeah,
that's for the kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought it was maybe for the cuddling.
Train. You're trying yeah. to read a book.
So it was interesting that I was just harping on it, and that was just a story that came out. Although I don't want to besmirch our fine military, but these guys go through like basic training or they become mm-hmm. Marines or something like that. And then at some point, they shoot up a school or they choke out Michael Jackson's doppelganger or something like that. And then you turn on the news and like, these guys are trained killing machines. It's like, we've all had a 23-year-old relative that mm-hmm. went through basic training. They didn't really look like killing machines
yeah.
when you saw them at Thanksgiving. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with that case. The other thing I thought was interesting that I wanted to get your guys' head on was this Evangeline Lilly. She came out, she made a comment, the actress.
Mm-hmm.
Is she from Lost, or am I mixing her
Lost,
up with
yeah.
the other one? There's some, Ellen Pompeo and Evangeline Lilly, to me, are interchangeable for some reason. I don't know why.
I have no idea who Ellen Pompeo is. I know that that's a name of a person, but...
Oh, she was in...
Grey's Anatomy.
Grey's Anatomy for 31 years or
Never
something.
Saw it.
Good for you. You don't know about Dr. McDreamy?
Not at all, no. Oh, is that... that's the guy with the brown hair. I don't fucking have any clue.
Narrowed it down to everyone in Hollywood.
I think it's just called Grey Anatomy now.
So she came out and made a statement about men being men and women being mm-hmm. women, and I greatly appreciated it. I don't follow her. I don't know what she's up to, but I thought finally someone in Hollywood is making a little sense. And I don't know if you have that paper.
I do have it. Do you want me to read this, or do you?
Yeah, you can read it if you're comfortable reading. I know you have a construction background, so. It can be difficult.
I'm vaguely literate. Okay. Yeah, she said, why are we only applauding masculinity in women and villainizing it in men? And why are we only applauding femininity in men and debasing it in women? Why can't we just allow for all of it? Why do we feel the need to vilify a man wearing shit kicker boots, driving a pickup truck who's not afraid to punch someone in the face? But if they were a woman... or if they were a woman, they would be the epitome of cool. Why is a man who loves makeup, cries easily, and stays at home and tends to be in to tend to the domestic responsibilities? But a woman, why is he valiant? But a woman who does the same is pathetic. I told you I can't read.
That wasn't bad. I don't think I could have done much better. The Fitzdog piece in studio. Yeah, so that is interesting. I thought, yeah, the dude is a yokel. Racist shit kicker, mm-hmm. and then the woman's a badass if that's her mm-hmm. pickup driving, boot wearing, mm-hmm. you know, take no shit from the local guys kind of thing. And then I thought, there's a weird obsession with roles and gender and sexuality, mm-hmm. and it's not that new. Like, I grew up, see, the reason I know about all the insanity now is because I had a hippie mom growing up, and my hippie mom in 1974 was trying to foist the same bullshit that they're trying to foist now. Mm-hmm. They had it a little different. They were talking about, you know, they used to talk about the ice age rolling in. Now they're talking about global warming. They had different, they called mm-hmm. it ecology mm-hmm. back when they wanted you to recycle, and they had lots of the same thoughts. They were just going in different directions. But she would always tell me there was a real popular thing like from the 70s that if you took a little girl and you gave her a pop gun, she would want to play with it. And if you gave the little boy a dolly, he would want to play with it. But what we do is we're foisting our own sort of preconceived notions mm-hmm. of gender onto these kids. So we're giving the boy the Tonka truck and we're giving the girl the dolly and we're forcing them mm-hmm. into those gender roles. And then you have kids and then you have a boy girl twin. And then you realize these bitches were fucking nuts in the 70s. There's my son. One time when my son was two, we had like a pink car seat for my daughter and a blue car seat for my son. And we went to the Feast of San Gennaro in Hollywood, and we just took my son, I think. And when we were trying to leave, the way the car was parked, like parking was tough, parked up like against a wall in the parking structure. We could only open the door that had his sister's car seat, the pink one in it. Mm-hmm. So we're like, all right, we live 2 miles from here. Like, get into your sister's car seat. Mm-hmm. We'll strap you in. He fucking pitched a fit. He's this close to throwing his beer at me. He was like, he was fucking going nuts. And I'm like, it's just a car seat. Just sit in the car seat. He's like, that's a girl's car seat. That's a pink. It's not mine. It's hers. It's, you know, and This stuff is woven into our DNA. Mm-hmm. It's as we are. Mm-hmm. You're arguing with nature. You're chalking it all up to society and nurture. It is not. It is how we mm-hmm. roll. I don't know why we're constantly arguing over what is, but we're there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find somebody's gender or sexuality the least interesting thing about them. I'm like, it's so fucking boring. But I'm like, I have three brothers. Growing up, I was such a tomboy, but I was also obsessed with Barbies. So I was like, you know, building bike ramps and lighting shit on fire. And then I would come in and like do my little princess shit. And it's like, who cares? I think it is weird when parents push kids in either direction. Like, they're a child. Let them do
stuff. You know, the kids gravitate toward whatever they're going to gravitate mm-hmm. toward. The parental thing, I don't think... I mean, maybe it's emphasized here in Los Angeles more than any other place, but it's a lot of, like, you've got to expose them to classical music and you've got to expose them. I'm 0 for 1,000 on exposing my kids to shit I want them to get interested in. You know, my son doesn't give two shits about cars. I love cars. I've exposed him to tons and tons mm-hmm. of car stuff. Not interested. Mm-hmm. He's not interested. He likes sports and stats, you mm-hmm. know. That's who they are. And my family tried to get me into like soccer and classical music and reading, and I was like, that's all for pussies. I want to fucking wrestle and play some football and jump my bike and light something on fire.
Yeah. I mean, that's the most fun shit ever.
Fitz, did you light a lot of stuff on fire when you were a kid?
Yeah, I got mad at my brother one time. Me and my brother are 13 months apart, so we're Irish twins. So the fighting was nonstop, and it got intense. And so one time he pissed me off. So I went in the garage and I poured gasoline on his kite and I lit it on fire, and the half the garage was in flames, and we almost lost our house. And then my mom came out and we all had blankets and we were throwing water, but it was a gas fire. So the water, it was like, you could see the gas leaking across the floor, and it just, it was chaos.
How old were you?
I was probably 25. No, I was, I was probably 11, 10.
Lighting stuff on fire was a big part of my childhood. Now, we didn't really, we didn't have video games or flat plasma TVs or smartphones, mm-hmm. so it was pretty much wrestling and then lighting shit on fire mm-hmm. was kind of what we did. And I was thinking about it the other day. Do you, Fitzdog, when you were a kid, did you ever make what they call a Polish cannon?
Is that like a Molotov cocktail?
It's like it's a distant relative of a Molotov cocktail.
Okay.
The Polish cannon, which works well, is you take three cans, like soup cans, right? And you take the lid, empty cans, mm-hmm. Lids all off, bottoms on. You then take the bottom off one of them, and then you take the bottom of the other one and you poke a bunch of holes in it, and then you take them all and you duct tape them together to create a three can long mm-hmm. cannon. You know, it's about 18 inches tall or something like that. Then on the bottom can, you poke a hole near the bottom on the side, like you're going to shotgun it. You know, like a quarter inch from the bottom of the can. Mm-hmm. Then you take that hole, or you can do it through the top, dump into the top. Something flammable. It could be cologne. It could be lighter fluid. Mm-hmm. It could be just about anything that's flammable. And you pour it in the top just a little bit. And then you put your hand over the top and you air it out. You blow in it and you air it out so it sort of becomes vaporized and becomes mm-hmm. like a gas. Then you take a tennis ball and you shove the tennis ball in the top, which fits perfectly through the can. Then you hold it and you take a match and you put it up to the hole at the bottom. And when you put it up to the hole in the bottom, the thing goes boom and it explodes and the tennis ball goes sailing. And that's what's known as a Polish cannon. But you will get bored of just doing that. So then at some point, you take the tennis ball and you douse that in lighter fluid and you put it down the cannon and you light it on fire.
Yeah.
And then you fire it and you do it at night. So it becomes like a meteor and there's this fiery ball flying through the neighborhood. And as it lands, it leaves a patch of fire as it bounces down the street. Mm-hmm. That was called a Polish cannon.
That does sound like a good time.
That's amazing.
There's videos online of that. Did anyone else do that as a kid? So my kids and my son and their friends, like, there's no matches. There's no,
no fire.
We put M80s in people's mailboxes.
Yep.
I would put fire. If my neighbor had like a lemon tree, we'd stuff a Black Cat firecracker in it, light it, hold it like a grenade, and then throw it at the other guy and blow pulp all over the place. It was all about fire and blowing shit up. Nothing.
When I was about 16, I was a parking attendant at a country club in New York. And the tradition was that on the 4th of July, they would have a big cookout and all the families would sit on the porch. There's a big porch facing the fifth fairway. And so they would give the parking attendant about $400 in cash. And you would drive down to Chinatown and you would load up your trunk with fireworks. And then you'd come back. And then that night, once the sun went down, you'd go out on the fifth fairway. We have no training. We have no idea how to light off fireworks. And you would just start blowing shit up. And so one year, we were lighting off Roman candles and it hit the American flag, which was in the side of the fairway, and the flames crawled up the flag. We tried to pull it down. By the time it got down, it was completely burnt. And all these Republicans that are sitting up on the porch, it was like their worst nightmare.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back, more stories. I'll find you some Polish cannon stuff. We'll do some news as well, and we'll do all that right after this. Let me tell you about Just Thrive. So much stress out there. You want to hit the pause button in life. You want to just breathe. Just Calm from Just Thrive. Well, they can help. Just Calm's all-natural blend of mood-lifting psychobiotics and brain-nourishing B vitamins helps you take back control and feel like your most cool and collected self. Multiple studies prove it works quickly and smoothly to smooth out everyday stress and sharpen your focus as well in as little as 4 weeks. Or Just Thrive Probiotic, a spore probiotic that banishes gas and bloat so your gut can produce more serotonin. Yes, it comes from your gut. Your happy hormone, that's serotonin. Plus, it supports better sleep. I take this every day. It's very important. The co-founder, Tina, she was on the show. I went out to dinner with her and her husband. They're very much involved with the science, and it is science. So take care of your gut with Just Thrive. Am I right, Dawson?
With Just Calm and Just Thrive Probiotic, you'll have the ultimate stress-fighting duo to help you feel cool, collected, and in control. Get 20% off your first 90-day bottle of Just Calm and Just Thrive Probiotic today. Visit justthrivehealth.com and use promo code Adam.
Let me tell you about Harry's Razors. There are too many choices out there. Menus, movies, razors, Harry's Razors. Makes choosing easy. They have better razors than the in-store options at the best price. Refill it when you need it, delivered straight to your door. Out here in Los Angeles, all the cartridges and razors are all locked up in a shark cage. You got to wander the store to find a guy with the right key ring. Not with Harry's. Get the quality shave without the hassle with Harry's. They have a $3 Harry's trial set, a $13 value for just $3 at harrys.com/Adam. Includes a 5-blade German engineered razor, weighted handle, makes a difference, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover as well. Plus, schedule replacement blade delivery whenever you need them. And they'll refill them as low as $2. So you never have to wander around seeing for the right cartridge, for the right handle. Highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry. No risk trial. You don't like your shave? It's on them. Go to Harry's. Dawson.com/Adam and get that deal. Right, Dawson?
Save the hassle, set up your delivery, and get the best quality shave with Harry's. Get a $13 starter set for just $3 at harrys.com/Adam. That's harrys.com/Adam for a $3 starter set. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, Adam. This is Eric. I'm driving through Delaware. I just saw a highway sign that says, drive like the person your dog thinks you are. So it begs the question, who does Phil think you are? Have a good day.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
My dog Phil just thinks I am the gatekeeper between him and food. But I will tell you this, and maybe there's a larger picture here. And let me give some love to Greg and Lisa. First off, Lisa going to be in Austin, Texas, at the Velveeta Room. That'll be tomorrow and Saturday. As you hear this,
August. I'm not there till August.
Oh, I don't know what happens.
Let's go there
when
tomorrow.
We do our research on this stuff. All right. Well, August is when you get, and then you go to lisa-curry.squarespace.com. And of course, Fitz Dog is going to be in the at Huntington Beach at the Rec Room. That'll be July 2027. No, that'll be tomorrow as you hear this, and also Columbus. Wait, Columbia, Missouri? Is that what that is?
Yeah. Yeah, it's outside of KC.
That'll be at the Blue Note, May 19th, in Kansas City, Missouri. Argosy Casino, that'll be May 20th. Go to GregFitzsimmons.com for all the live dates and watch these guys do their great stand-up comedy. All right, what the hell was I talking about? Shit.
Your dog.
Oh, my dog. All right. We got footage of a Polish cannon. Now, this guy made a little nicer Polish cannon than we could do it. But you put something that's flammable in it, you vaporize it, you air it out, you put a tennis ball in it, and then you hold a lighter down at the hole at the bottom. All right, let's see him fire it off here.
Make sure you don't use matches. There you go. Scared all the birds out of the tree.
Right towards the houses.
Yeah. Seems like a bad idea.
Oh, Polish cannon was one of the biggest parts of my childhood. It was like on a Saturday, we'd go Polish cannon. But the problem is we didn't have any money. Like, we couldn't go buy lighter fluid or gasoline mm-hmm. or something. But my dad had, like, Aqua Velva aftershave mm-hmm. or electric shave. Or, you know, mm-hmm. aftershave was a big mm-hmm. deal in the 70s. You had to have... Mm-hmm. They would take your kids away if you didn't have aftershave for some reason. I've shaved 200,000 times, and I've never felt the need to, like, slap on some blue liquid afterward, you know, do that thing where you're just like... Mm-hmm. I'm just done shaving. I leave. Yeah. I go, hey, what's going on? Why am I not drizzling some alcohol onto my hands and then slapping myself in the face? Yeah. I don't know what good. It was refreshing or somehow good for your skin or something. But aftershave, big deal.
Just another thing to sell you.
In the 70s. And pretty much gone now, right? There's no more aftershave.
Well, there's more of like, balm. There's like lotion now. There's no racing. They used to use witch hazel. So if you had a small cut, it was like being shot in the face.
Right. Yeah, but the point is we couldn't make a Polish cannon now out of these creams and salves that these girly men are rubbing on their face after. We needed something that was alcohol-based. Mm-hmm. You know, it was pretty much... I think all aftershave was just rubbing alcohol, blue dye number 7, and just a little hint of some zest or scent mm-hmm. of something. That was about it. But you know what it really was? I don't think guys ever bought aftershave for themselves. That was the gift that your mom would buy your dad from you when you were 9.
Oh, yeah.
So you would buy him the aftershave, but you wouldn't really buy it. But it was just, it was always a gift. Mm-hmm. And it was really about the bottle. Like, did it have a big wooden knob that looked like a stick shift knob on it or something? It had to be something serious. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The substantial. But we would go in and get my dad's aftershave. And it's like, my dad must have been wondering where the fuck his aftershave was going. He probably thought I was an alcoholic because we were dumping. We would dump it in and air it out and then just boom, just fire. Are there any where they fire the tennis ball where we can see the tennis ball like hit something, or where they lit the tennis ball on fire? It's also it's probably not culturally correct to call stuff a Polish cannon.
I mean, I'm Polish. I'm fine with it.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. They used to call quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles Ron Jaworski the Polish cannon.
But that sounds like that.
But I don't know if that had to do with the actual device I was using in North Hollywood. Or the Polish cannon was so popular in the 70s that he got a nickname, the Polish cannon. Yeah.
I mean, you know, cannon is synonymous for something that's huge.
Yeah.
So
good. And he's Polish.
Yeah.
All right.
I think it's what Tom Arnold calls his cock.
The Polish cannon?
Yeah.
I've heard that. So back to Phil, in terms of training. So here's the thing. But this is going to be a bigger picture. That's the theme of the show. So we start off with a metaphor, and then we get bigger with it, which is my dog, Phil, 110-pound lab, and he doesn't listen to anybody in the house. He goes into the swimming pool at night, does a lap, comes out of the swimming pool, walks back into the house, jumps onto my son's bed, and there's 110 pounds of wet black lab that just sleeps on top of of my son. If you put something up on the counter, which is 36 inches high, and slide it all the way to the back, to the backsplash, which is 24 inches deep. I used to install a lot of cabinets. That is not far enough away from Phil to get up and go grab that thing. He has taken on, you know, forget about pretzels and cookies and peanuts. He's gone through everything. He went through a double-decker box of See's candy, the double-decker big box, the big double-decker box in my office, up on a shelf, did the whole box to his head. He's actually gotten hold of glass, a Laura Scudder's glass container of peanut butter, pulled the lid off with his teeth and went through the peanut butter. Of course, he always drags it over to the shag carpet. He stays off the tile or the hardwood. He needs shag. He is a destructive force. He does not. He has diplomatic immunity. He knows he does whatever he wants. He recognizes no authority. And he just
I love him.
He just gets away with murder and does whatever he wants. Opens every door with his head by, you know, mashing against it. If you, God forbid, you leave him outside for 15 minutes to dry off after he goes for a night swim, he'll start barking. You know, get over here. Get me in this house. Now, sleeps on every piece of furniture, sleeps on every bed, does whatever he wants, right? Because he deals with the super pathetic white people who raise him and feed him, meaning me and my family. But there is one presence in the house. That woman is named Olga, and she's Guatemalan, and she's a nanny. And in her village, dogs are dogs. They don't sleep on the bed. They don't come into the kitchen. They don't take shit off countertops. Otherwise, they get a fucking shin to the ribs, right? And when she's in the kitchen, Phil sits outside of the perimeter of the kitchen. He lays on the hardwood that's right up against the white tile where the kitchen is, and he just stays there. It's a no-fly zone for Phil. And she can get up and leave the kitchen for a half hour. He's not venturing in. He's not going near that kitchen, not while she's there. If I'm in that kitchen, he's in the kitchen. He's on top of the kitchen. He's tearing shit out of the trash can. He's opening. He will open the trash can, the cupboard that has the sliding door on it where the cabinet is shut where the trash can is. He will pull it open, tear everything out of the trash can, strewn it all over the kitchen. He does whatever he wants. Now, you have to put everything, everything in my kitchen is on top of the vent that's over because that's 6 foot high. Every sack of nuts, every pan of brownies, every leftover chocolates from Easter, everything lives at the 6 foot level on top of that. Olga is staying over. She's sleeping over at the house. She's house sitting 2 weeks ago, right? House sitting 2 weeks ago. Grabs the big sack of cashews from on top of the vent, where it's all sitting now, takes it down, walks into the living room. And keep in mind, with Phil, if I eat a bowl of chicken and rice in my office and I set it down on top of my coffee table and I walk into the next room for 15 seconds and come back, it's on the floor, the fork's on the other side of the room, Phil's got it. Made short work of whatever was left in that bowl every single time with impunity. Olga takes down the cashews, the big sack of cashews, goes in at night, sits in the living room in front of the TV set, watches her TV, sets the sack on the living room couch. That's where Phil does. He takes his prey there. He takes it in the living room because that's where the shag carpet is. Gets up, goes upstairs and goes to bed. Phil's sleeping somewhere in the house, but he's always on patrol. Wakes up the next day, and she thinks to herself, oh, shit, I left 2 pounds of cashews on the sofa. Hurries down. It has not been touched.
That's crazy.
Because Phil will not fuck with Olga.
Damn.
And I'm saying we can do that shit with people, too. You know, we do this thing all the time with, oh, the homeless, or they're misunderstood, or these poor students, or this guy's been arrested 26 times because he comes from a hard knock, you know, sort of back. Everyone catches on to consequences super fast. Kicking the fucking ribs. Phil is the least obedient, dumbest creature on the planet, but smarter than shit and understands every rule when it comes to the person who will enforce the rules.
No, it's like when you see a family of white kids in the back of a minivan and, you know, they won't keep their seatbelts on. They're making faces and giving you the finger out the window. And then you drive past a bus stop and there's a Guatemalan woman with 4 kids and they're lined up. And
yes.
Quiet.
That's right.
Good kids.
Yeah, it's just training is exhausting. Like we had labs when I was growing up and they were insane. I lived on a lake and they would jump in the water and catch a fish and bring it in the house and it would be fucking disgusting and there's water and fish guts everywhere. And I have a shepherd now and I trained the shit out of her and she is so well behaved. It's, you know, but we never trained our labs. We were like, they'll figure it out. They don't figure it out.
I think the labs and a lot of dogs have a conversation, which is, look, they're going to try and break you early. They're going to bring a crate in. They're going to bring a guy in with cargo shorts and big calves, maybe. He's got a ponytail, but he's also bald up front. They're going to try. And they're going to try hard for like 3 weeks. And if you can withstand that 3 weeks without learning anything, you will fucking break these rich people. And you'll have a lifetime of just doing whatever the fuck you want with them looking the other way. Because... Yeah. What happened with Phil is we tried to train Phil, but Phil trained us. Yeah. He trained us to be rich, apathetic fools who just at a certain point just went, oh, fuck it. It's my fault for leaving the box of fucking chocolates in my office and not closing the door. It's my fault. You know, that's what Phil, he taught me. He trained me. He house trained me to blame and then yelling at the kids like, well, what did you leave the cashews on the counter for? Why? You know, Phil's gonna, you know, like now I'm yelling at them. But I should have been yelling at Phil, but he trained us.
Yeah, right.
So all you have to do is kind of withstand the storm. It's about 3 weeks of people trying, throwing money. You know, the problem with the trainer, the dog trainer, he's no different than the nutritionist who comes over to the house and goes, all right, now let's look. Here's what we got to do. We got to throw out all these Eggos, and you got your fucking frozen French toast. And no. Get kids poached eggs and jicama for breakfast. You understand? Or you can have some, you can have some oats, but unsweetened. You know, don't go with the prefab microwave stuff or whatever. And it's like, but at some point the guy leaves. And then once he leaves, we're right back to whatever the behavior is. And it's the same with the dog. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to walk them. You have to bring the treats when you do the walk. You have to yank the chain. It's like, it's all good and well until you leave. Mm-hmm. And we slide right back into our apathetic, lazy, fuck it. We'll throw money at the problem situation.
Now it is. And it's a 3 week investment that pays off for the next 15 years. And like, I see the guy, like I live in Venice and I see the guy with the beach cruiser, and his lab is running next to him with no leash, stops at the stop sign, turns with him. And then you got me with my two dogs, and I don't take them for a walk. I take them for a drag.
Yes.
What kind of dogs?
They're little, a Lhasa Apso and a Shih Tzu.
Yes. No, you're exactly right. I sort of liken walking Phil, who's 110 pounds. He's a powerhouse, and he listens to nobody but Olga. And when I take him for a walk, it's like, you ever see those films of a guy like hooking a marlin up with a fishing pole? And it's like the marlin starts tacking to the right, and then all of a sudden he starts pulling hard to the left. And it's like, he's under the boat! He's under the boat! And then he pops up and starts pulling. And the guy, all the guy's doing is leaning back and trying to figure out what direction this. That's all I do, is I lean back, and he just pulls hard this way, and then he switches the other way. He does not walk next to me. Oh, we have a Polish cannon shooting a tennis ball, everyone. You guys never seen the phenomenon of the Polish cannon.
Oh.
All right. Oh, yeah.
It makes a difference. It makes a huge difference.
That guy fired a tennis ball about 200 yards.
It hit the tree about 40 feet up and bounced. Oh, my gosh.
It's about all the fun we had in North Hollywood back in the day.
You know, Adam, I'm thinking maybe the Westminster Dog Show was this week. And, you know, you got all these pedigree dogs that have been trained for every moment of their life.
Mm-hmm.
What if we enter Phil in the Westminster Dog Show and the announcer has to go from, and Scotty is a young thoroughbred pit bull. And as you can see here, he's got a nice prance. He's got a good gait. The head is straight. He's listening to all commands. And now here's Phil. Phil is, he's licking his own asshole now.
Yeah, he's gone in the seventh row. He's stolen somebody's popcorn. He's now running out on it. Yeah, I mean, that's what there should be. I've always said this. Yeah, there needs to be one completely untrained, out of control sort of moose of a dog that's in that tournament. Like I said, I would watch Major League Baseball if every single game they couldn't have three professional outfielders. One had to be the drunkest, fattest guy who was up in the stands at Philly. And now it's up to you to figure out where to put him in the outfield, but he's in the out, he's playing. He's a guy with the big, you know, he's got a shirt on that says making bacon and it's two pigs fucking.
Yeah.
His gut slopping out underneath the shirt. Whatever he's eating, he has to bring out onto the field. So he's got a tall boy beer and some peanuts, and he has to sort of rest that down there. We just give him a mitt. If he's wearing flip-flops, he's wearing flip-flops.
Flip-flops.
He just has to. The other team gets to pick the drunkest, fattest guy in the stands at the fourth inning, and he just swaps out with the professional player, and he's got to play it out there.
Yeah.
Now there's a lot of strategy involved, because now you got a right-handed hitter coming up, but he's a push hitter, so you got to move that guy out and slide the center fielder to shade it over to right. Or do you split it? Like, do you have the real guy like stand in front of him and leave center field wide open? Yeah. But I would then watch the shit out of that, mm-hmm. because on occasion that guy would make a great play.
Yeah.
Like, on occasion, there'd be a towering fly ball hit out to right field, and he'd be holding his beer and, like, stumbling backward, and it would just land in his mitt,
yeah.
and the place would erupt.
Yeah.
They would
yeah.
just go fucking nuts. Mm-hmm.
I think take it a step further. Put the drunkest guy in the stands at F1 behind the wheel.
Ah, yeah.
Let him start in position one.
Well, I like where your head's at. You kind of eliminate the fat guy, because anyone over 150 pounds can't fit into that car. But
yeah.
there is a danger and a money part of that, because the car's worth, you know, $11 million, and there's a lot of guys out there with a lot of – it's expensive, and there's a danger part. Mm-hmm. This would be no one gets hurt. You know, if that guy yeah. is going after – a ball that got between the second baseman's legs, and he slips and eats shit and does the fat guy belly flop and spills his beer or whatever. No harm, no foul.
Yeah.
All right. Why don't we take a break, and we'll come back. We'll get into the news in earnest right after this. Let me tell you about my girl, Angie. That's right. Angie's List. Well, it's now Angie, and they made it easier for you to get all the projects you need to get done and done for your home and done right. I use this, and I can do all of this stuff. I got the tools. I got the know-how. But I don't got the time, so I use Angie. They'll hang the pictures. They'll do the things that I don't want to do. And you get your time back. 20-plus years of home service experience, and they've combined with new tools to simplify the whole process. On the Angie app, just answer a couple of questions and they can handle the rest. See ratings and reviews, compare quotes from local pros, and connect instantly. Cross items off the to-do list with just a few taps on the phone. Whether it's routine maintenance or a dream remodel, Angie makes it easy. Right, Dawson?
Get your next project done with the help of a pro from Angie. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
See what's streaming free all month long during Amplify AAPI Voices on Pluto TV. Watch shows like Kim's Convenience with Simu Liu and amazing movies like Meet the Patels and Jason Momoa in Braven. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows available on live and on demand. Download Pluto TV on all your favorite devices for free. Pluto TV. Stream now. Pay never.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Monroe, Louisiana. A 37-year-old man led police on a chase after they attempted to pull him over for having his high beams on. After running 6 stop signs, he was pulled over and stated he wanted to finish the hamburger he had just purchased. The man was driving a 2006 Chevy Impala. Definitely not a Jew.
Dawson. Fitz Dog with us. Lise Curry's here as well. And we'll get into a little news. What do you got?
All right. First up, Lionel Richie would rather have sex than undergo plastic surgery to maintain his looks. He is claiming that sleep, sweat, and sex keep him looking young.
Really?
At 73 years old, he's claimed that his face has not moved at all.
He says he's never got any work done.
Mm-hmm. And he says plastic surgery locks you in for a year while you recover.
A year?
I've not heard that.
No. That suggests to me that maybe he's getting something done, right?
Yeah, it sounds like he's overcompensating. Like, well, I don't know. What could it be? 5 years? Huh? Who knows?
Is he getting a lot of fillers? Is that what it is?
I guess when he performed at the coronation, which that's my bigger question. When he performed at the coronation, people were saying that he looked like he had had work done.
He doesn't really age. Mm-mm. But you have to incrementally age, otherwise it'll get weird at a certain point. But I think the brothers can pull it off a little better than, like, just take hair. If you're black, you can have black hair into your 70s and no one really says anything.
Yeah.
White guys try that and it looks weird, especially when you're going, like, jet black. But you need to sort of... It's what you want to be is behind your chronological age on your driver's license, but not 30 years behind it, like 14 years behind it.
Yeah, it starts to look scary after a while.
At a certain point.
Mm-hmm. It's ghoulish.
The thing about Lionel Richie is I've seen him perform a few times. He doesn't sing very well, which is
no,
weird.
He just appeared at the coronation. He was like one of the only... legitimate acts that the king could get. He asked like Adele and he asked the Spice Girls, Elton John. Elton John turned him down. Elton John won't turn down. You know, he would play the improv tonight in Hollywood if you asked him to. And he said no to the king. And I thought like, all right, like if Charles wants to be the king, that's kind of a baller title to give yourself. You want to be king?
Right.
And act like a king. Get medieval. And round them all up. Get Elton John and the Spice Girls and bring them to the castle and chop their fucking heads off.
Mm. Yeah. Or at least give them the opportunity to perform or they will get their heads chopped off. It's also, God, everything's so political. Everything's so weird now. These are things we could have never imagined a few years ago. I don't know, like maybe you go a different direction. Like once Elton John and the Spice Girls and Adele and everyone starts turning you down, maybe at that point you go, we're going Blue Man Group and Thunder from Down Under. Like we're just going to change gears over here. We're going another direction. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or we'll go like an all country version of the coronation, you know, because.
Yeah, why not?
You could get Garth Brooks.
No, absolutely.
You could, and you could get, I don't know, Toby Keith.
In a second. You could get pretty much anybody, I think, in America.
Yeah. Shania Twain. You could get all the country acts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
Country acts will do it.
Yeah.
I remember Trump. Remember Trump had a hard time. He got, some country people, but he also got like. Three Doors Down.
There had to be some weird pitches, too, like with Trump. Like his lieutenants were like, oh, you didn't know Scott Baio had a band? Oh, they're quite good.
Yeah.
you never. Oh, well, you should check him out because he says he's in. He says he's going to be in the D.C. area. Yeah. So maybe you just change directions altogether and you go with some sort of like Cirque du Soleil or something like that. That's if all the top name music acts of England turned me down, I wouldn't go sloppy seconds. I would change the direction.
Yeah. Say, you know,
once Harry Styles and Adele turn their back on you, now we're going into something different. Or I don't know, what would could a stand-up, could Ricky Gervais, you know, get up there and do 20 minutes? I mean, that'd be a tough crowd.
He's the new court jester.
Yeah.
Old school.
Put him in the outfit.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. How embarrassing for everyone to know, like, you are the literal king of England, and all these people are like, nah.
And the problem...
I'm not interested.
See, the problem with everything... I mean, the problem with the coronation and being the king, you know, you can do a podcast and you can say, hey, man, do you think we could get Dave Chappelle on? And then they'll go, oh, he's touring. He's not around, or the dates don't work, or he's in he's in Georgia shooting something or whatever. And I'm sure they're lying, but they can just bullshit. You know, mm-hmm. It's just like the same. But the coronation, you start planning that 9 months in advance. And you are the king of England. There is no, he's got some dates or he's, he just wants to hang with his family because he came off the road. You know, like there is no viable excuse other than turning you down. Like Elton John lives in the castle. I don't know if you know that. Oh, yeah. He's in the pool room of the castle. He's physically at the castle 3 times a week. He's actually in the kitchen making himself at night. Like, there's no way Elton John can't get to the castle. He's up the street from the castle.
Yeah. Well, he was close with Diana, though, so I'm sure he was like, fuck these two.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess he is. And I don't know. Did Diana get fucked over? Was he cheating on her?
He
didn't
want to
marry her.
Camilla.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. And I'm not like a royal family scholar. It's just one of those things where you absorb the information on accident.
You know what's great? Whenever you watch any of the news stories, if you ever watch like Entertainment Tonight or any of those kinds of sort of entertainment news shows around this, all they do is throw it to somebody with an English accent who stands in front of it's probably just a picture of the castle. Mm-hmm. It's probably in the studio. Like there's probably just a screen that has Buckingham Palace in the background, and there's some chick from Chicago, and she's like, "Thank you, Billy. Let me tell you, the king fireworks were flying here," and we just assume they have all the inside knowledge. Yeah. And Harry showed up. 28 hours he spent before he sped off on a British Airlines flight to be reunited, and you just sit there and go, well, that person has an accent. Behind them is a picture of Buckingham Palace. So it'd be like if I just stood in front of the Kardashians' house and you went, take my word for everything that's going on inside of this house. Because I'm from Encino and I know that they all throw to their English person. Mm-hmm. They're like 29. They don't know shit. They don't have any moles on the inside. They don't have any. They don't have any ghosts in there that are feeding them information. They just have an accent. Mm-hmm. They look good, and we have nothing to compare them to. So we never question what they're saying. Does anyone think about that? It's probably all bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I feel like that's how Americans are with British people in general. Like a British 10-year-old could tell me something, and I'd be like, "Yeah, no, that sounds right."
Yeah, as long as they had the accent, right. But you think about just getting some hot-looking 25-year-old chick from America to coach us all up on what really happened in Korea or Vietnam or World War II. They don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Yeah. Now, it's all about the background. It's like when there's going to be a hurricane and they stick some poor bastard out on the beach holding on to a telephone pole and he's telling you about the storm. It's like, this guy's not the best meteorologist. This guy is the low man on the totem pole. He knows the least about weather. He's the new guy, and he's the only one that can get to go out there.
And also, we're not going to get an unvarnished truth from him because he's being punished by the weather right now, and he's angry at it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So we're not going to get, but if you're in the south end of Florida, you're probably going to be fine. He's being hit by waves and palm fronds. He's angry. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's totally biased.
It's biased. Right. We should have someone in a controlled condition just look at a map and explain what's happening, not being attacked by the weather.
It's also going to be, of course, it's going to look more severe if you're standing in it. If there's bad weather, get the fuck inside. Get in your house or leave town.
It is once in a while they'll find footage of those guys because cameramen learn to hate whoever they're filming eventually because they're always on talent, prima donna dickheads, and they're always yelling at the cameraman to go back to the van and go get them something or whatever. And then at some point, those guys will roll on 30 seconds before they go to the live hit. Yeah. And that guy will be trying to find himself a deeper puddle to stand in or taking water and slashing it on his face. You know, they'll find that guy trying to cook it. And then the cameraman will film it and then he'll release it. Because that's how it works. Like, Casey Kasem's audio guy hates his guts. Everybody in there hates my guts. Everybody behind the scenes learns to hate the talent. And they will then release shit that you said on a hot mic or you said in between takes. Mm-hmm. It will find its way outside of the studio. That's what happens.
You think Dawson's got a reel?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And he's going to want to collect. Soon. Yeah. No, here's the lesson. Mm-hmm. Don't play a nice person on TV, because then when you're screaming at the audio guy, when you're Casey Kasem screaming at your audio guy, that's something. If you play Larry David on TV, then there is no way to threaten you with you being a dick off camera, because you're a dick on camera.
Yeah.
So be a dick on camera.
I think I'm going to do that moving forward.
Do that.
That's a good
That's what I do.
On to the next news.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Heavy cannabis use has been linked to schizophrenia in young men.
Oh.
Which is exciting because that means I am safe.
You're a woman.
Yeah.
I, you know, so author... writer, used to be formerly New York Times guy, Alex Berenson, who got himself in a bunch of trouble during COVID because he was saying a bunch of factual things and that got him thrown off of Twitter and stuff like that. But he had a book out, and he'll be on the show. He's been on it before, but he had a book out like 4 or 5 years ago. And he was basically saying, my wife is like a pediatric psychologist or neurologist or something, and she's seeing a lot of bad effects from pot in like young men and schizophrenia and whatever. And of course he was pilloried because pot somehow we've sort of culturalized it in some way where you can't say anything bad about pot. Like, you can talk about the ill effects of alcohol or cigarettes or almost anything or McDonald's or anything. But if you start saying, hey, pot may not be good for you, like, people get really fucking agitated and they go nuts. There's two things you can't talk shit about. Pot and Rihanna. Like, if you go, I don't want my kid smoking pot, and Rihanna's look like she's packed on a few pounds with the baby weight, you will be thrown out of this town. You talk two syllables of shit about all you got with Rihanna. She's so beautiful. And now that she's pregnant, she's even more beautiful. She's stunning. She's stunning. She's stunning and beautiful. And pot, it's like you have to just talk about the beautiful qualities of marijuana. Tell Your Children the Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence was the name of his book. He was destroyed and attacked for just basically going, we should look into this. And by the way, the New World Order is when somebody speaks out and it's an unpopular position and everyone attacks them. Go find out more about what that person has to say, because they might be on to something. But anyway... yeah, pot is super heavy duty now.
Yeah.
And it will get you way more fucked up than the leaf and the shake and the stems and the seeds we were smoking back when I was making Polish cannons. Later on, we turned the Polish cannon into a bong.
Of course. Yes.
Real easy. We had the hole on the side. We had
still
the tube.
The flammable liquid.
Yeah, we just put a little funnel in the bottom there and spark it up. Mm-hmm. Polish cannon from about 9 to 13, and then bong from 13 to 41.
Perfect.
But it's not good. It's not good for your kids. And it may fuck them up, and there may be some long-lasting effects.
Yeah, it's saying, you know, like, chronic use is bad, which I'm like, I have to agree. I think, you know, I know a handful of people that are fucked up that are... I love to get stoned, but I know people that are fucked up all day and all night. And it's like, you need to have just natural use of your brain. You can't be in outer space all the time, because then these people... I actually have a cousin who smokes weed all day. Every day, all day and night. And she is she's exhibiting signs of schizophrenia. Like, she's into her 50s, and I think, you know, it's probably something from her mom's side of the family has a long history of mental illness. But, I mean, she has straight up told me she's been abducted by aliens multiple times, and, like, you know, after the fires in Griffith years ago, all these fairies had moved into her house and they started
Griffith
moving
where?
Things around. Whenever the fires were in
Griffith
Park. Yeah.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Yeah, all kinds of strange things are happening at her house, according to her. And she, like, I mean, she also, like, there's a number of other factors. She lives at home. She's single and alone all the time. So she's just with her own thoughts,
she
fucked
sounds,
up all day.
Sounds hot.
she used to be a model.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We'll talk after the show.
If you're looking for signs that it fucks you up mentally, two words, Grateful Dead. I mean, for four decades, people have gone out and said, hey, this is awesome.
Right. I know. Yeah. Sign two, one word, fish. Same thing. It's like, I've been to 181 Fish concerts. Right. Because you can't remember the last one you went to before you get to the fucking parking lot. Before you get into your Uber, you've forgotten all about the last one.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. The point is, altering yourself frequently has side effects.
Yeah.
Whatever you alter yourself with, and whether it's pot, it's not noble. It's just another thing you alter yourself with, and you should probably limit it, and you should hope your kids don't do it. I will tell you that living in Los Angeles and in Greg's home base over there in Venice Beach, California, I would guarantee you that if you spoke to every parent in your neighborhood and you asked whether they wish their kids smoked pot or vaped, 81% of them would say smoke pot over vaping. So that's how good a publicist pot has.
Mm-hmm. Vaping like tobacco?
Vaping. It doesn't really matter because it's the thing about vaping, what's bad about cigarettes is the smoke part.
Mm-hmm.
Once it becomes nicotine in water molecules, then it's not. I know there's a bunch of commercials that talk about what it's doing to everybody. It isn't.
I have no idea.
Caffeine. It's like saying caffeine. It's not inherent. Nicotine is addictive, but it's not bad for you. Caffeine is addictive. It's not bad for you, is what I'm saying.
Got it.
Yeah, okay. The tar that you get. I think it's the tar from the cigarette.
Right, right. But we in Los Angeles are much more motivated against vaping than we are against pot.
Yeah.
Which shows it's an interesting prioritization, but it's just a bunch of dumb fucks.
It's kind of all the same. Anybody's going to argue for it. I'll make arguments for coffee all day and night because I drink like 6 cups a day. It's not good. It's not good for me.
But it's not bad for you.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, it's bad for you if you feel like you can't do without it. But physiologically, nicotine and caffeine don't do anything to you physiologically.
It's just addictive.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm all right with that. Moving on. Elon Musk urges Don Lemon to launch new show on Twitter.
I think he thinks Don Lemon has something to say that people want to hear. I think that's a miscalculation.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to survive. There are people that have shit, whether you agree with them or not, you know. People want to hear what Tucker Carlson has to say, or they want to hear what Joe Rogan has to say, but I don't know that they want to hear what Don Lemon has to say.
Yeah, he seems kind of milquetoast. He's kind of whatever.
I mean, he has thoughts, but they're not, it's like every one of the ladies from The View has a take, but there's nothing there. There's nothing interesting. There's nothing where you go, oh, okay, I've never really thought about it that way, or that's an interesting take. They're all just the ones you would expect them to have, and there's nothing that's ever thought-provoking or interesting. It's just, but it's a take.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this is kind of interesting. There used to be, and there was all sports radio guys were like, look, Lakers are up on Sacramento. Lakers are up on Golden State 3-1. If you're a Lakers fan about now, you want to seal it in Golden State. You want to win that game. You want to move on. Now, if you're a Golden State fan right now, you want to win. You want to take it one game at a time. You want to win the next game at home. That'll put you at 3-2, down one. Then you focus on the next game. You win that game. If you're a Golden State fan about now, you tie it up. Now it's tied up 3-3 because everyone is playing for a championship. Don't kid yourself, people. It's a business. Mm-hmm. So if you're a Golden State fan about now, you're looking for victory on Thursday. If you're a Lakers fan about now, you want LeBron and company to go over there, win that game, wrap it up, and move on to the semifinals. And it's like, you just spoke for 20 minutes and you didn't say anything.
Yeah.
You just said the same sort of thing about now. You said the same thing for 20 minutes.
Just in a loop.
There's nothing I learned. Yeah. I learned that if you're a Golden State Warriors fan, you'd like them to win. And then if you're a Lakers fan, you'd like them to win.
Well, but the only way they're going to get that W is they got to put the ball in the basket. I mean, that's the bottom line.
You can talk X's and O's. You can talk fouls. You can talk penalties. At the end of the game, you look up at that scoreboard. That's going to tell you who won.
Yeah.
Okay? And then there's a lot of them doing this. Hey, I can sit here and tell you it was about this. It was about that. It was about LeBron James, Kid Bronny. But at the end of the day, you look up at that scoreboard. I'll tell you who. When that final buzzer sounds, that's a score. Okay? So that's all sports radio used to be, along with like weird, along with sort of absurd hot takes. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they'd go, who's the better quarterback at Green Bay? Is it Brett Favre or is it Aaron Rodgers? And then a guy would go, are you kidding? Aaron Rodgers couldn't carry Brett Favre's jock. He shouldn't even be in the league. He should be set on fire. Are you kidding me? And it's like, he's pretty good. The other guy, it's kind of a coin toss. You know what I mean?
Yeah, some kind of opinion.
So that's kind of what The View does, and that's what Don Lemon does. It's sort of nothing talk in a circle, lots of accusations of weird racism like sprinkled in, but no one wants to hear what he has to say. I don't think he's going anywhere.
I can't wrap my mind around wanting to watch any TV show on Twitter. I'm like, I liked Twitter when it was simple and it was like two sentences or whatever, and then they keep making the tweets longer and there's all these ads and videos, and I'm like, now it's trying to do too many things. It's not fun anymore. I liked it when it was just jokes.
Yeah, I think the fun people went to Instagram and the people that just want to bitch and moan stayed on Twitter. It's a complaint box.
Well, we'll see where Don Lemon ends up, but I think he's going to end up with whoever hosted The Bachelor, which is We Don't Care.
No idea.
That's the point. There's certain people we do not care about. I've talked about them many times.
All right. A widow who wrote a grief book after her husband died has been charged with his murder. This actually gets a lot better because she has kids, and it is a grief book for children.
Oh, really?
I think this lady's thinking outside the box. I like her.
Did she murder her husband, did you say?
She's been charged with his murder after he autopsy found that he died of an oral overdose of fentanyl that was five times the lethal dosage. So it's...
But did they find it in the sugar bowl? Like, because he could have been a junkie, or she could have been sprinkling it on his flakes, right?
Yeah.
When people are accused of killing their spouse, that's about my highest believability.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I'm dubious on other murder cases, but spouses, I tend to go there. I also
believe that she could have legitimately had remorse. You could kill somebody and then go, wow, that was fucked up. I killed my husband. I feel awful. I'm going to write a book about this.
Yeah, I think I would have more grief if I killed my spouse.
Yeah.
I think I'd be more likely to be able to write a book about it.
And what a book that would be.
But for children.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do children, first off, I feel the same way about children's books as I feel about porn. We have enough. We're done. There is 200 million hours of porn that's currently on the internet right now.
Yeah.
You cannot come to me and go, I'm so frustrated because there's a certain genre of porn that I like and it doesn't seem to exist. It all exists. Mm-hmm. There's 200,000 hours of every single genre. There's the stepmom genre. Mm-hmm. There's the white on black genre. There's mm-hmm. big titty. There's big booty. There's everything. There's no such thing as you looking for porn that doesn't exist. There's you looking for porn that you can't find, but there's not looking. It's essentially a humongous warehouse, and whatever it is you're looking for, it's a Home Depot, and you need fine thread 3/16 of Allen-headed screws. It's in there. You just got to find it.
You're in the wrong aisle.
You're in the wrong aisle.
Yeah.
But it's in there. There's no reason to say we need to stock the Home Depot with more. It has every screw, every nut, mm-hmm. every bolt, every widget, every blade, every piece of plywood, mm-hmm. every 4x6, every strap, every hanger, mm-hmm. every hold down, every piece of all thread, every form tie. It's all there.
Yeah.
We don't need any more. And I feel the same way with children's books. Every fucking celebrity's written a Jimmy Kimmel's written a children's book and Jay Leno's written a children's book. Those are just late night guys. That's just a late night genre.
Colbert wrote one.
There's no such thing as a children's book that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
They're all 9 pages. Yeah. They have 4 words on them. Something to do with a duck mm-hmm. and a squirrel. Every metaphor and lesson, it's all mm-hmm. there. It's all there. There's just no reason. But if there wants to deal, Seth Meyers wrote one too. Every late night show host has written one. That's how ubiquitous. Everyone has ever been on a sitcom. There's recipe books for kids. There's grief books for kids. No more. When I'm in charge, if you want to write a kid's book mm-hmm. or you want to do porn or you want to do what I want to do, which is combine the two, you got to talk to me.
Yes.
And you got to prove to me why this doesn't exist and why we need another version of it. Mm-hmm.
And then the giant came down the hill. And when we say giant, his cock was huge.
That's right.
He was the Polish cannon.
That's right. No more children's books. No more porn until it's vetted with me.
Yeah. I just think this is a good selling point. You know, my kids were going through a lot of grief. Their dad died. And so I wrote the book. I mean, what a good story to do a press circuit.
I bet Steve Martin has written a children's book on grief.
Yeah.
But did he kill his wife first?
I don't know. I didn't wait till the end of that movie. But I'm just saying it's ironic. But I think Fitzdog's right. Maybe mm-hmm. she was so grief-stricken from mm-hmm. killing her husband that, Fallon wrote a book. Are you telling me Leno? If Conan O'Brien has written it, okay. So Fallon, Kimmel, Leno, Seth Meyers,
and
Colbert. I'm just saying, I'm not saying this isn't a story about late night guys writing books. This is a story about how ubiquitous children's books are. If we just took everyone who's currently on late night and figured out that they've written a book, mm-hmm. that means one out of every 3 Americans has written a child's book. So Fallon as well. Okay. James Corden, did he write one?
I don't see one from him.
Okay.
Ed Sullivan?
No, because guys who, late night guys, would drink, smoke, and fuck their assistants. Yeah. Speaking of that, did Letterman write a book there? I don't think Letterman would write a book either. All right, Fitzdog, I know you got a heart out, which could be the name of your children's porn, by the way.
It's 3 little pigs. Don't call them pigs. They're super hot.
All right, Fitzdog is going to be at the, wait a minute. Yeah, at the Rec Room tomorrow, right. All right, I got that right. Huntington Beach and Columbia, Missouri, Blue Note, May 19th, and then Kansas City, Missouri, Argosy Casino, that is May 20th. Go to FitzDog.com. Sorry, GregFitzSimmons.com. That's GregFitzSimmons.com. Let's see. All right, and Lisa Curry, you can go to Lisa-Curry.squarespace.com. Peter Attia, who's a really interesting physician and a writer and a longevity guy and a race car guy and set a bunch of swimming records and cycling records and stuff like that. We're going to talk to him right after this. Hey, it's Adam Carolla. Is your vehicle no longer stopping like it used to? Or does it squeal, shake, or grind when you brake? Don't miss spring brake deals at O'Reilly Auto Parts now through April 25th. You can get 15% off when you buy a set of Brake Best Select or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors. Brake Best Select and Import Direct brake pads are engineered for all driving conditions to restore and improve braking performance. With application-specific friction formulas, noise-canceling shims, and low-dust operation, trust Brake Best and Import Direct to deliver better braking. Don't take a chance on your next brake repair. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts will help you find the brake parts and supplies you need to do the job right the first time. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit online, O'ReillyAuto.com. All right, let me tell you about the Jordan Harbinger Show, a different kind of sponsor for this podcast. It is the Jordan Harbinger Show. If you like fascinating podcasts and interesting people, then you should definitely check it out. There's an episode for everyone. No matter what you're into, Jordan talks to Scott Adams about persuasion in a world where facts don't matter, or you go inside the dark world of wildlife trafficking. You'll always find something useful to apply to your own life, like routine changes to boost productivity or slight mindset tweaks to change how you see the world. We enjoy the show. We've had Jordan on a few times, been on this show. He's been on me and Drew's show a few times. We know you're going to as well. So it's the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R. And you find it on Apple Podcasts and wherever you listen to finer podcasts. It's the Jordan Harbinger Show.
In celebration of Jim Carolla's upcoming 92nd birthday, here's a list of 92 things Jim Carolla has never done. Number 60, been on a cruise. Just one of 92 things Jim Carolla has never done. Let's get back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Physician, writer, podcaster, Peter Attia has joined us, and he's a big race fan, so we'll get into some of that as well. Outlive, the Science and the Art of Longevity is the name of his book, and you can find it wherever you find finer books. Good to see you, Peter.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks so much for having me.
Something I've been thinking about lately in terms of longevity, how much of it is genes and how much of it is lifestyle versus genes? And then how does stress factor in?
Well, let's start with the first question. So lifestyle versus genes plays, so the lifestyle plays more of a role for people with normal lifespans. So, you know, people who are going to live to be 80, 85, genes aren't playing very much of a role there. That's largely driven by how you choose to live. Once you get into the really rarefied air of, you know, living into the 90s and beyond, the centenarians, that turns out to be a highly genetic proposition. So on average, people who live to be 100 are actually kind of doing worse things than the rest of us. They're more likely to smoke, less likely to exercise, less likely to watch what they eat and things like that. So there's a super genetically gifted group that live to be 100 or more, and then there's the rest of us. But for the rest of us, what we do moves the needle the most.
Yeah, so it's sort of like In a way, I just happened to grow up with a couple of guys that had sort of phenomenal physiques and did nothing to earn it. You know, they just ate junk food all day and drank beer, and they looked amazing with their shirts off and never worked out. You know,
but so they must have been young, right? I don't think they're doing that. They didn't get away with that at 50, did they?
No. But when the genetics are really strong on a guy or a girl, you can really take them out and abuse the shit out of them for a long time. And they hang out for a long time. I mean, even like at 50, all you have to do is sort of, you know, not eat pineapple upside down cake for every meal and walk a little, and you'll still look better than most guys that are working at it, you know. But in terms of longevity, the genes, when you have those genes, those super long lasting genes, those are going to trump everything. But like the diet and the exercise and the physique, most of us just live in the middle. So there are people who look amazing no matter what they do. And then there are people who can't keep the weight off no matter how hard they try. But throw out the high and the low, figure we're all somewhere in the middle, and figure that your lifestyle is going to factor in quite heavily.
Very much so.
What about stress?
You know, of all the things that kind of negatively impact our health, stress is unquestionably an important one. It's also a very difficult one to quantify. So, for example, we can quantify the negative impact of high blood pressure and type 2 diabetes and high cholesterol and all of those things. But stress, we don't have a biomarker for it. So all those other things I just talked about, we can measure those things. I can measure your blood pressure. I can measure your cholesterol. I can see how high your glucose is and know if you have diabetes. But I don't really have a good way to measure your stress. And it's also not so much just the external stress. I mean, you're probably under a lot of stress. You know, you're running a successful podcast, but you might not internalize that stress. That might not actually translate into something internally harmful. Conversely, you could have somebody who externally doesn't seem like they're managing the weight of the world, and yet to them it is. And therefore, the internal realization or experience of that is negative. So stress is definitely one of those Goldilocks things. Too much of it and too little of it is harmful.
Oh, too little of it is harmful.
Yeah, if you think about it, imagine a life with no stress, with no stimulation, with no, you know, anxiety about anything. I mean, that's also generally a life that probably is lacking in a bit of purpose. And so, yeah, a lot of things in biology come down to a Goldilocks principle.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you do a lot of racing, and I know you talk a lot about it, and I know you're very much interested in it as a sort of, and in a weird way, kind of metaphor for life, kind of balance and preparation and, you know, weighing risk, reward. And it does, I think people sometimes go, oh, that guy's a gearhead, but it's not really that. It's sort of what it stands for. You're alone. You're on your own. You're having to kind of manage yourself and a machine and a kind of an apparatus around you. And there's things you can do that will get you around faster, and then things you can do that'll get yourself hurt. And you have to kind of make these decisions in real time. And I know you're a big Ayrton Senna fan as well, a huge Ayrton Senna fan. And then there's a story about him that I was wondering if you knew, that Indianapolis 500 winner Tony Kanaan conveyed to me. Do you know the go-kart story?
I'd love to hear it. No, I might not know this one.
So I wouldn't know it if Tony didn't come in here and tell me about it. But when Tony, I think, was 16 and he was in, I guess, Brazil, Ayrton Senna would invite all the young go-kart drivers over to his house to have a race, a go-kart race. And I said, well, that's interesting. Tony Kanaan, who's an Indy driver, he's won the 500 maybe more than once. I don't know. We can look it up. But anyway, I said, you know, I've done a little bit of go-karting, and the deal is you were a teenager and Senna was a man, and he probably weighed 35 pounds more than you. And, that's going to give you a big advantage in a go-kart. And he said, oh, no, he put weight in the go-karts. He weighed everybody, and he weighed the go-karts and added weights to Tony Kanaan's, which I was like, oh, yeah, because that's who he was. You know, he wanted everything the same. And he said that he inverted the grid and that he and Tony Kanaan started in the back after qualifying, and they both wove their way through the field. But Tony Kanaan beat Ayrton Senna in a go-kart on his go-kart track at his home. This is probably about 3 years before Senna died. And then he said later on that Tony Kanaan was trying out for a team in Indy, and he was nervous, and the owner was there and stuff like that. And Ayrton Senna sort of happened by, walked into the trailer, and said, this guy here, he's faster than me. I think you should hire him. And then left, and he made the team. Yeah, he won. Tony Kanaan won championship titles. That's 99. And I'm asking about, so he won Indy in 2013. Oh, he won the Rolex Daytona overall winner. He's won the IndyCar Series Championship. He's won the Indy Lights Championship, Formula Europa Championship. He's obviously done a lot of winning, but I've always thought about that story, and I didn't know if the world's biggest Ayrton Senna fan knew it.
No, and I love learning little new stories along the way, and I've got many great friends in Sao Paulo who have introduced me to his family, and sometimes the stories I hear from them are just the most amazing. But in a cart, he was truly a legend. Angelo Pirello, who built his cart. So Angelo at DAP, which was the team that Senna raced for when he left Brazil, went to Europe to begin his professional career. As you know, but maybe the listeners don't, I mean, back then, karting was what you were doing as your first professional venture, but you were doing that not until you were, you know, probably in your late teenage years. Today, they're getting to F1 much quicker. But Angelo said Senna was as dominant as he was in F1, which everyone acknowledges, he was even more dominant in a kart. He said it was, you know, in his view, he was the single greatest karter that ever lived. And just as was the case in F1, where he was so dominant in the rain, it was the same in karting. He said that they would usually just before races, if it was raining, just say, do we really even need to have this race? I mean, we could just give him the trophy now. There's really no point in doing this.
Wow. But Tony Kanaan got him that day.
He got him on that day, huh?
Yeah, it's a really funny story, especially to hear Tony say it. So for you, I was looking up some stuff, and I was checking you out. I was thinking about all the time you spend in a race simulator and what that kind of does for you. But it's a sort of bigger picture thing, which is a sort of preparation thing. And we've kind of lost our way with preparation. I just feel like I deal with a lot of people that like show up and I go, where's your computer? And they go, oh shit, it's at home. You know, or whatever. Like every single makeup person I've ever dealt with in Hollywood, if I'm sitting in the chair, I'll go, you know, the back of my neck's getting a little shaggy. You think you could clean it up? Do you cut hair? And they go, yeah, I cut hair. And I go, oh, okay, good. Can you get your trimmers to clean up? They go, no, I don't have them with me. It's at home. And I'm like, it's as big as a sandwich. Just throw it in the trunk of your car. Like, maybe they're bullshitting. I just feel like I'm dealing with people that are never really, you know, guys show up audition for stuff. They don't know the material. Like, there's no, we've lost preparation, and I don't know where that lands in your mind, but you know, if you're going on a racetrack you haven't been on before, you want to spend countless hours in that simulator trying to figure out the line, right?
Absolutely. I mean, without a simulator, I don't think I could be making the type of progress I've made, because I'm, you know, I didn't start doing this till I was an adult. You know, I'm a little, maybe less than 10 years into this, nine years into it. And I don't have a karting background, right? So most of these guys, they got an insane volume of reps in a kart. I mean, hours upon hours upon hours. So they're really learning the vehicle dynamics in a kart. And, you know, I only get to learn that in the car. So I have to do all of the other learning in the sim, right? That's where you train your vision, for example. I don't think it's natural for people to put their eyes where their eyes are supposed to be when they're driving. I think it is our nature to look right in front of the car. But as you know, you can't drive that way. I mean, once you make that apex, your eyes better be up and they better be far down the road where you want to go. So the simulator is a remarkable tool that, you know, you get your footwork down, you get your hands down. I mean, you know, you learn the tracks, of course. You should be able to show up on, you know, the first time I drove Coda, it was like, I couldn't believe how well I knew it. Like, I couldn't believe that the 1,500 laps I put in the simulator translated to actually knowing every bump on the actual circuit. So, yeah, I guess to your point, why would you not want to take advantage of that?
I don't know why people don't take advantage of many things, but it seems to be something that's pervasive. What do you drive normally when you go to the track?
Well, if I'm going to be self-critical of anything, it's the fact that I like so many different things that I'll probably never be great at anything. So I'm just as happy driving, like a spec Miata as a Pro Mazda or, you know, a GT3 RS or something like that. I mean, I guess if you said pick one car or one class of car that you would drive indefinitely, it would certainly be a formula car. So, you know, F3 cars are probably at my skill level, not the F2. And there is just something really magical about downforce. And I don't know, maybe it's just, it makes me feel one step closer to my hero. But you know, being in a single seater with a monocoque, it's just, there's nothing that feels quite like that.
Do you do any vintage events or professional events?
No, my kids are still relatively young. And what I've basically said to them is, look, once you guys can hang for the whole weekend, it'll be worth me investing that amount of time. But right now I'm limited to single day, you know, stuff that I can do locally at Coda and Harris Hill, where I'm a member.
So you do track days. I think you'd like to do, I think you'd really enjoy vintage. There's many categories. I mean, they'd have a category that you would enjoy. You'd be able to find one. You can probably get into something, you know, semi inexpensively. I mean, it's all things being,
I'm waiting for the words inexpensive and racing to exist in the same sense. When you figure that out, let me know.
Well, it isn't. But I will say that it's hard to put a price on a passion sometimes.
No, No, the smiles per dollar quotient is still insane.
And it's hard to, there's just something about being on the track with 42 other cars that just sort of adds some sort of level of something to it that it's hard to simulate, not speaking about a simulator, but talking about like track days and stuff like that. There's just something about sitting in the middle of 40 cars coming around turn, whatever, waiting for the green flag kind of thing that just, it just sort of fills your senses up. So I think that's something you're probably going to want to give a shot on one of these days.
Yeah. I'll tell you the other thing I've become really enamored with, though my wife thinks it's the most ridiculous thing, she can't fully wrap her head around it, is drifting. Mm-hmm. So a good buddy of mine named Josh Robinson, who's a professional, he's a formula drifter. He runs this place down here in Texas called the Texas Drift Academy. And he's got this enormous skid pad and real drift cars, right? So you've got the wheels cambered appropriately. You've got everything set up for actual drifting. And that's something that's hard to put in words in terms of sheer joy. And again, even if you're not interested in racing as a drifter, the car control that you learn in drifting is wonderful, right? Because you know, obviously in a car, you don't really want to be oversteering. But when you learn to control an oversteer, which you have to in a drift, your confidence for being a little bit past the limit and recovering goes up.
Yeah, oversteer for people not in the know is when the rear end starts coming around. And it's sort of how do you react when that happens. And when you drift, you're just in a constant state of oversteer. So you're in a constant state of reacting to it and dealing with it, which is good training for a regular race, when the rear end starts coming around, you'll snap into sort of drift mode. So for you, you also do a lot of endurance stuff, right? And a lot of sort of challenges. I was reading that you went from Maui to Lanai round trip. First person to make that round trip swim? That's pretty insane.
Yeah. I mean, that was a while ago. That was actually 15 years ago next month. And that was a period of my life when I was doing a lot of those things. Every year I would do one or two of these really long swims. I don't do that anymore. I don't do anything that's really extreme anymore compared to what I did for most of my life as far as, you know, really extreme endurance stuff. But I still, you know, I probably spend 4 hours a week trying to do that type of training. It's certainly the most important thing that we can do to live longer and live better is to basically do strength training, do cardio training. And the dividends that they'll pay both in length of life, which is, you know, you could probably add about a decade to your life by being very fit. But I think more importantly, it's the quality of your life. You know, I think a lot about Paul Newman and how late that guy was driving. To me, that's the kind of stuff I think about, right? Is, you know, he was still driving a car only a few seconds off some of his best times at Lime Rock within a year of his death. And as you know, that requires a certain amount of fitness. So I think there's lots of motivations to want to be fit well into your 80s and beyond.
Yeah, his number on his car was his age. And I think 83 was the last one he ran at, which was a Trans Am Corvette that I think he bought that he just wanted to go racing with. Lime Rock was his hometown track, so to speak, yeah. his local track, and he was very dominant there. And I have a Porsche that he drove at Petit Le Mans with Skip Barber, Barber Racing. The same guy took him to Le Mans in '79, and it's a Porsche GT3 Cup car from 2000. And he was at Road Atlanta. It's a big, fast track. And he was the fastest guy on his three-man team, and that was Dick Barber's team. And it was, I don't know, he was 70-something, 2070. He was like 73 or 74 or something.
It's amazing.
When he was doing it. Well, I think the point is you have to have passions, you know, like what keeps you alive? Is it the exercise that keeps you in shape to pursue the passion, or is it just having the passion that sort of where everything else sort of is a distant second to your passion? And it's sad to me that I talk to so many people that don't seem to have passions, you know, like their passions seem to come in the form of when they're waiting for the next Star Wars movie to come out or something. And I'm like, that's somebody else's passion. That's not your passion. And I just talked to a lot of people that just don't, they just go like, I like to hang out, you know what I mean? Or I like to eat or something. And I don't really know how you bequeath that to somebody. Like, you know, we have to teach these kids to be interested in, yeah, but they're not interested in what you're interested in. And they're not interested in you telling them to be interested.
Yeah, what do you think's changed? What do you think explains that?
I think that when I was young, and I'm older than you, that boredom was a very important factor in motivating people to kind of explore and do things. So there was a combination of boredom and poverty and doesn't exist because Amazon doesn't exist. So what you would have to do is you'd have to do a lot of improvising. Like if you wanted something, you couldn't really go, I'm just going to go to Amazon and pay $8 and get it. You'd go, I got to go make it, or I got to figure it out, or I'm bored and there's no entertainment. There's no stimulation. Nothing is flying at me. I have to get up and leave the house if I would like to entertain myself or amuse myself. I cannot stay here on this sofa and be endlessly entertained. So we were kind of pushed out to go do things. And those things were usually tactile, you know, had to do with like you'd go outside and like you'd spot there's a swimming pool over there and then there's a deck above it and a thing. And I bet I could stand up on that railing. I could probably make it to the deep end if I jumped hard enough, you know. And it was a lot of calculations mixed with a lot of trial and error, mixed with some ingenuity. It was like you were trapped on an island. It was like one of those movies where the guy, you know, the main character's trapped on an island and he has to make a shelter. So he, but in an ice skate washes ashore. So he uses it to cut the branches down. And now he's got to start a fire. Like that was my entire childhood. And so I got sort of intrigued with things and like to tinker with things and like the way things, like the way a tool feels in your hand or the way a car feels when you can shift it into the next gear and grab the right gear just at the right RPM. You know, this was very tactile. And now there's like air conditioning and Grubhub and there's a 65-inch flat panel TV that's parked in front of you. Where are you going? You have 500 channels. I wouldn't have left the house either if those were my options. So yeah. I think there's something going on there. It's not really leading to a good place, but I don't know how to correct the ship.
Yeah, that's beyond my pay grade, but I don't disagree with anything you've said.
And I think for me, a lot of what we're talking about and a lot of the problems that plague society, a lot of, you know, self-harm and depression and suicide and addiction and all the things we don't wish for our children. I feel like a lot of it is us getting away from a sort of physical, tactile, kind of engaged society into a kind of digital sort of synthesized version of society that is making people literally go insane. I just think that there's something to going out and building a treehouse with your kid that just makes you totally sane. And there's something about just staring at your phone all day that makes you go deeper into the abyss. And we have to figure out a way to get people out to the garage. Essentially.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you can overstate the benefit of nature. Again, if you just think about it through an evolutionary lens, the world we live in right now is obviously very symmetric. It's very manicured. It's very, perfect in some ways. But it's also very foreign to our genes, right? We spent 99.99999% of our times living outdoors, where there was no symmetry and everything was sort of fractal in nature. And I don't think, you know, I can produce level one evidence to this claim, but I would still take it to the bank, which is the more time you spend outdoors in nature, and that could be walking, that can be gardening. My favorite activity is rucking. So carrying a very heavy weighted backpack. I think the happier you are. And I agree that that's, you know, we're lucky because we live in Texas. You got a lot of room out here, but that's kind of one of the things that we think about a lot with our kids is just making sure you got to be outside every day. You got to be, you know, trimming branches off trees. You got to be building sandcastles out of mud. You got to be doing that kind of stuff. You'll probably never be able to, you know, take a kid away completely from electronics. I think that would be probably too forced. So I think the question is, can you just counterbalance it?
Yeah. 100%. And I'll also tell you anecdotally, but you'll be able to probably confirm this. The guys that you deal with who are in a tactile world, whether they're carpenters or welders or the kind of guys you see at the track, the guys mm-hmm. that have to show up with spares, the guys who have to show up prepared when something breaks. You know, I've been at the track, seen a guy blow his motor in qualifying, and then you show up the next morning and him and his guys rebuilt the motor overnight and they're putting it back in the car and they're back in the race kind of thing. It's like those guys are never suicidal, miserable. They're never complaining. They're never gnawing at their own paws. You know, they mm-hmm. seem They're not running around clicking their heels together and celebrating life and singing. They're just centered. There's just something about a task and something tactile that has this centering effect. And you tend to end up finding a lot of common ground with these people. Like, it doesn't even really matter what the subject is. You go to the track, you'll find you have tons in common with all these guys. And you'll always announce, like, that guy's a good guy. That guy's a good guy to have a beer with or whatever, because they're all problem solvers. They don't blame. They don't really externalize. They kind of go, we got a problem. We got to work on it. We got to fix it. We got to see if we can shave a few tenths of a second off our last lap time. And you'll find those guys are always engaged, always in a good mood, and just some of the best hangs you'll ever have in terms of just a guy you could have a beer with at the track.
Yeah.
And I that's all I got. I know people in the digital world, and I know people in the tactile world, and the carpenters and the welders are just, they're not in bad moods. They don't go all in. Like, when something like COVID comes around, they don't panic and dive into the deep end of the COVID swimming pool and panic. They just sort of go about their business. They're like aware that COVID exists. They're not thumbing their nose at COVID. They're just going to work. They don't have super strong opinions about Donald Trump or COVID or Biden or anything. They just go to work. They sort of have their little task, complete the task, and then start a new one the next morning, or continue the one they didn't finish the night before, right?
Yeah.
And I have found myself being attracted to guys who race cars, who build cars, who go to the track, because you'll just go, I feel like that guy's a kindred spirit in this new world order we've been living in. Have you had that experience?
Yeah, look, I love it, because when I'm there, that's the only thing we talk about. I mean, nobody says, what do you do for a living? Nobody says, you know, what's your politics? Nobody says, what do you think about this, that, or the other thing? It's about, how are we going to extract more performance out of this car? Let's look at the data. Let's look at the telemetry. What if we try this tire pressure, that tire pressure? Can we change the wing here? Can we change this there? Oh, I don't like this gear ratio. Can we switch it here? Oh, wait, I want to change the brake bias. I mean, that's all you're talking about. And I think that's, I'm sure there are people listening to us right now that don't have a clue what we're talking about, but I don't think the specifics aren't relevant, right? It's not, you know, you don't have to, it doesn't have to be race cars, but, you know, they're, for me, that's bliss. And the other huge hobby I have is archery, and it's the same thing. Like, when I'm doing my archery with my archery friends, I mean, that's, we're talking about spines, we're talking about shafts, we're talking about, you know, this draw weight, this cam cycle, this, you know, all these nerdy, goofy things. And that's all we're talking about. We're not talking about anything else.
Yeah. There is something really magnificent about a hobby and a passion. And I think it's so important. And I think we've kind of looked down our noses at it as we've gotten more into the academic world, that this guy's out fiddling around with his El Camino in the garage every Saturday. Who cares? It's a pile of junk. You know, you should come up and write poetry with me in the house, you know. But I really do think it is, we are shooting ourselves in the foot, getting away from these passions and these hobbies. And I would just encourage anyone to go out and find one. And it doesn't matter if it's archery or racing cars, or anything in between, because everything is in between, somewhere in between archery and racing cars. That the point is that you're into it and you would like to get a little better at it each time. That's the key. Peter, we will, let me give you a plug. Outlive the Science and Art of Longevity. I hope to see you at the next F1 race. Are you going out to Vegas and watching the F1 race?
No, I'll do COTA, and then I go watch a couple of the ones out of the country. But I'm going to watch Vegas from TV.
And well, maybe I hope to spot you at COTA. I think they do a vintage race there every once in a while, and I'll probably try to get one of my Datsuns out out Dakota. I tried once, and it would turn out to be like a rained out weekend, so I didn't take it out on that weekend. But as you know, Ayrton Senna, he's not bothered by the rain. No. Adam Carolla is. Peter Tia, yeah. Thank you very much for hanging out. When you're in L.A., come see us in person, please.
Sounds
and
great,
I'll so show you a bunch of Paul Newman cars if you come out to L.A.
I'm going to be taking you up on that
as well, because I think you get a kick out of that. Thank you, my friend. All right. I can be found in Las Vegas tonight. Yeah, that's tonight at Jimmy Kimmel's Comedy Club. And then Oklahoma City, Bricktown Comedy Club as well. That is May 19th and 20th. And then New York City. I'm going out there with Garrigus and Dr. Drew. And we'll see how that happens. So that works. Sony Hall, May 26th, 27th. 27th is my birthday, so come on out and say hi. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Peter Attia, Lisa Curry, and Greg Fitzsimmons saying mahalo.
Make sure you get a copy of Adam's latest book, Everything Reminds Me of Something. It's available where finer books are sold. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and get your tickets to see the Ace Man at adamcarolla.com.
See what's streaming free all month long during Amplify AAPI Voices on Pluto TV. Watch shows like Kim's Convenience with Simu Liu and amazing movies like Meet the Patels and Jason Momoa in Braven. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows available on live and on demand. Download Pluto TV on all your favorite devices for free. Pluto TV. Stream now. Pay never.
Well, I just want to tell you about a quick podcast study here. As you know by now, we all do our very best to align the right sponsors to the podcast. It's a lot of work behind the scenes, and I'm actually incredibly grateful for your support. We're currently running a quick survey at podcaststudy.com, and we're giving the first 150 people a $10 digital Amazon gift card as incentive to complete your survey. The information we hear from you about our sponsors is incredibly important to the show, and we can't thank you enough for taking a few minutes to help us out. It's free, so cut us a break, would you? Upon completion of the survey, you'll be asked to include your email address, and we will send the first 150 people a $10 gift card from Amazon. So go to podcastingsurvey.com, and thank you again for helping out our show and our sponsors.